Here's what's coming up on today's show.
Because all these things work together, and the idea is to get to a place where you're financially independent. So it's oftentimes doing a lot of things together, and then the result's great once you get there.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brett Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Well, welcome into the Retirement Cafe. Glad to have you today. Today, we're going to discuss one of the most important areas of financial planning, and that is your savings rate. Understanding how to evaluate and improve your savings rate is a key to becoming financially independent and reducing that overall stress that surrounds your money. Welcome in Dan and Britt from Avery Wealth. Look, listen, guys, I know this is a great topic today, but I'm curious some of the reasons why maybe you decided to pick this one out for this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is that there's so few things we can control in the world. And, you know, when you talk about money, the reason we wanted to focus in on this is one we actually can have some control over, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can't control the markets, but you can certainly control whether you're consistently setting aside money and saving for the future.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even the part where we talk about savings rate, we're going to talk today a little bit even about where you can save money too. And this is not designed. One thing we will say is that we're going to talk in general terms. Like, everybody's situation's different as far as, you know, your tax rates, what your income is, like what tools you have available. And we'll get into some of that, but the big picture is that when you understand, like, there are various ways to put money away for different uses, and then to start tracking it, I just think it's super powerful because it can change your life. It really can.
Yeah. And as you are tracking it, obviously, hopefully, you're going to be motivated to continue to increase that amount, and just the huge impact that that can have on you and your family's future.
Yeah, it's funny. And one of the reasons you asked about why this topic, I think probably, you know, Brent and I have a lot of people in 401ks that we talk to. One of the number one questions is, hey, how much should I be saving in here? You know, because typically it's percent, right? They'll be like, what percentage should we put away and all these things? And like, you know, that's why we did this show, is because we want people to kind of begin to understand what's reasonable.
Right.
You know, how much should you be saving in here to put yourself in that good situation?
All right, so why don't we start out with how you actually define a family savings rate?
Yeah, well, I love math, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course. I mean, that's
I know that.
That's what we do. So, yeah, I mean, what you would do basically to calculate this is you just take your total annual savings and divide that by your total personal income.
Yeah.
Right? So an example of that, if you were saving $10,000 a year, for example, and you made $100,000. This is easy math, right? That would be a 10% savings rate.
Yeah, right. And I mean, and it does sound simple, but it can be a little complicated. We're going to walk in a little later on, like how to actually get into details for your own situation. But, you know, the big thing that you need to understand is that this is a high level, like math, right? High level computation. And it's really all the accounts together, right? We're going to get into a little more about like 401ks versus like maybe IRAs and things like that. But the point is that it's really totaling up everything you're doing, right? And we're going to talk a little bit about what isn't savings, you know? So like, if you put some money in a savings account and then 2 months later you use it, that's not really savings. You're setting it there for a future, you know, use that you know is coming up.
And I think it's important to note this, because I've had clients do this where they'll try to calculate it and they'll say, well, I'm saving 5% of mine and my wife's saving 5%, so we're saving 10%. Well, it doesn't work like that. So that's why it's important to look at what dollars are you saving, and then what's your combined. So if you're if you're a married couple, you'd look at how much are we both saving in dollars, how much are we both making, and then do the math on that, and that would give you the percentage as well.
Yeah,
because a lot of times people think they're saving 10%, but they're really not.
Right. And that's why as we get into this little bit of actually calculating your own, that's a really good point, is to stay away from percentages, like until you get to that final number, right?
Right.
Talk more about dollars, like how many dollars are going in, like how many dollars is my wife putting into her retirement account, how many dollars am I putting in, and then it's easier to do the math. So that's kind of what we're getting at.
All right, so we defined the savings rate. Let's now explain kind of why this is so important.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing, Brent, now you've probably heard us say this before, there's only four things you can do with money, right?
Right, you can spend it, right? Which is a lot of people, that's their first choice.
That's fun.
Yes. Save, You could use it to pay down debt, mm-hmm. or you're forced to pay taxes.
Right, right. Usually,
that's not usually one that you opt to do, but that's something that you can do.
Yeah, but really, that's the four places your money can go. And one of the things, if you look at people that are successful with money, this is one of the key metrics that drive it. And so that's why it's so important, is that, you know, understanding, which we're going to get into, what your savings rate should be, and then tracking and monitoring that is one of the best things you can do to be financially independent.
Right.
So it's like all this other stuff. It's funny, that guy that we used to work with, Ted, who's retired now, he used to always say that. He's like, forget all this other stuff. You know, his thing was, if you save 15 or 20% of your income your whole life, you'll never worry about anything.
Right. Which is true. It's totally true.
Absolutely true. Yeah. And it's like such a simple thing, right? Now, executing it may not be that easy, but the point was, he was dead on with that, right?
Well, and the other part of saving a higher rate like that is it does provide a lot more flexibility in your plan, because if the unforeseen happens and you did have to pull it back for a short period of time, you have a lot more room in your budget, right?
Because
that's money that's not going towards spending, it's going towards saving. So
it's a great example. Like if out of those four buckets, saving, spending, taxes, and debt, if your debt bucket's really high, you can't really change that, right? If you've got these payments that are due, you have no flexibility. They're due if something else comes up. But if it's your savings rate, you could change it some for a short period of time. And really, high savings rates, it really lets people feel better. It's, you know what I mean? You feel, because deep down, you know, like we always talk about, not to get all scientific, but the subconscious brain kind of knows what's going on, right? And so a lot of times we'll have something bothering us and we don't really know what it is, and then it'll eventually come to you. These are the types of things, like if you know you've got a system in place where it's like, hey, I'm saving this chunk of money every month, you just automatically feel better, which is huge.
Oh, well, and the results of that are huge. And we talk, you mentioned 401k participants, and a lot of times that's what you see if you've helped them develop that behavior, mm-hmm. right, of saving, and then they start to see the results of it. Just the impact that can have is huge, because they start, the stress comes off, they start to feel confident in the things that they're doing, and they want to do more of that.
Yeah. It's funny, too, like one of the reasons we think this is so important is that We have people many times coming in just about ready to retire, within a couple of years of retirement, and we'll ask them, like, hey, how have you been so successful? How have you been able to accumulate what you've been, you know, what you have in your 401ks and different investment accounts? And almost every time, it's the same answer. Well, I just set my savings rate many years ago and just did it.
Yeah.
Like, I never looked back, meaning they didn't decide, oh, I'm going to lower that because I want to buy some more stuff. That was just like a preset. I'm never going to see that money. You know, it's for retirement, and they left it alone.
Yeah, paid themselves first, right? Yep. That's a lot of times. And, you know, we know humans by nature give more weight to things that are, closer in the present. So a lot of times it's difficult to save, because you can go buy a new car, or you can go buy a new house or whatever it is you're going to buy. And that's in the present, right? And it's harder to do something that's longer term. And that's why it's really important to track this over time and to continually have a goal to improve it.
Yeah, you feel better going and getting some current reward, right?
Right.
That's why we always talk about, too, like if you read books on like good habits and all that stuff, it is important, like if you're doing something that you don't get an immediate payoff for, find some way to reward yourself.
Right.
You know, if you've like, oh, I got through another year, I saved, and my savings rate was at 12%, you know, somehow you really should figure out something you can do to give yourself a little bit of a reward for it. So it gives you balance and makes you tough to stand.
Well, and you mentioned people just setting it and forgetting it. Have you ever had somebody come in here and say, well, every month I remembered to, you know, journal money out of my, like, that's never happened before, right? It's just something that they had to have it automatically set up, because if you're relying on yourself, you're always going to be able to come up with a reason not to do it, because there's something in the present that you want.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great to point out there. And this measurement, you know, as you talk about it, I'm sure the question comes up, how do we actually determine and evaluate what our score is as a family?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing determining your score, I want to kind of break it down into some really basic method. So what I recommend, number one, is take out, like, you know, you could take out all your quarterly statements. So if you got your, most 401ks give you a quarterly statement. you can just look right on there. It'll show you what your contributions have been for the quarter, right? And so to keep it simple, unless you have a paycheck that varies wildly, you know, and it might be different, but for most people, you just multiply that by four, right? And you can annualize and say, okay, I'm saving, you know, let's say $2,000 went in. You're like, okay, that's $8,000 a year that I'm putting in, right?
Right.
And so you just start making a list of anything that you systematically save to. Maybe you do a Roth IRA and you're like, oh, okay, I put $200 a month into that. So we know that is, you know, going to be $2,400, right? And we just add up those things. Yeah. And then once we get those all added up and annualized, right, so it's on an annual basis, that's our number. That's how much we're saving. And then, you know, here's where people can get in a little bit of trouble. So you want to then take your annual income and do the math, right? So it's how much of those dollars I saved divided by what my total income was. Now, you don't want to necessarily pull that from a tax return, right? The problem with pulling that number from a tax return is that on your tax return, it's actually, for many people, if you have pre-tax savings, it's not your gross income. That's showing you your income after that money's come out, right?
Right.
So it's not the right number.
Right.
So you're better off just looking, even on a paycheck or your end of year W-2, or you're like, okay, here was my gross income.
Right.
And by the way, when you look on those documents, you'll see one number is after 401k contributions, the other one's like gross of those. So just be aware of it, but that's something where people can get the number wrong.
Yeah. And it's important to know also that if you're putting money into a savings account, like people will have different accounts for Christmas presents or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about money that's being saved for long term, whether it's retirement or college savings or whatever may be the case. That's the savings rate that we're referring to.
Yeah, because you don't, I mean, it feels good to be like, oh, and I saved $500 in a savings account, but the reality is that savings account might be to pay your property taxes later in the year. So that's not really savings. It's really part of your annual spending because it's an ongoing cost. And one thing you do have to be a little bit careful about is if you do have some more short-term goals, like, hey, I'm saving a few months because I want to buy or I'm going on this trip, I probably wouldn't include that.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, anything that I think that you're going to be spending in the near future shouldn't be included in this at all.
Yeah, that's my feeling too.
Yeah.
And so really to evaluate it, you know, typically savings rates should be in this, it's kind of a wide range, but we'll talk about why, between 10 and 30% of your income.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think higher income earners should have a higher rate.
Yeah,
right.
People ask that question, and a good way to think of that is that if, you know, let's say Brent and I lived in the same neighborhood, and let's say Brent made, you know, more money than I made, well, our utility bill would probably be the same.
Right.
Our, you know, maybe like our trash pickup's the same, or, you know, so a lot of those set costs don't really vary. So what that means is if Brent makes more money, he should have a little bit more money to save.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. And then, you know, you want to make sure that your savings rate is increasing over time, I think, is important. And as your income increases or as you get older, a lot of times the savings rate will get higher. When you're getting older, a lot of times that's because most people, when you're younger, sometimes it's a lot more difficult with debt, maybe college debt that you had or other things like that that you're paying down. But kids too, right? I mean, we know kids are expensive. And so as you get older, I think that's another reason why it should increase. And so what we're talking about is, well, 10 to 30% is a pretty big number. Where should I fit in that?
Yeah. And so think about that. Younger, really not as much disposable income, probably closer to the 10. As you grow and you make a little more money, you're into your house. So maybe that down payment on the house has been taken care of, some of those things. Then at that point, your savings rate should be going up, right?
Right.
Because you have more, quote, disposable money at that point. So if you think back to those four buckets, you know, saving, spending, debt, and taxes, you know, you don't have to be like a math major to realize, okay, when I'm young, there could be a lot more of that out of the total going to that debt bucket,
right,
like Brent was talking about. So as you get older, you can improve upon that.
What about employers' contribution? Should this be included in the savings rate calculation?
Yeah, that's a great.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody's opinion on this varies.
Yeah.
But we feel like yes. I mean, it should be included because it's money that you're saving for the long term.
Yeah. Yep. And I think the big key to it is understanding that, so back to our calculation, remember it's total savings divided by your total income. Well, believe it or not, that is, contrary to some belief, that's part of your income, like their match. So we have an example, right? So let's say you make $100,000 a year. We like easy math, by the way.
Yeah.
We don't want to do anything too complicated on the air. And you had a 4% savings rate, or match, I'm sorry, like a match from your employer. So what our recommendation is that, you know, if you just took that back to that example of $100,000, you were saving $10,000 a year, you had a 10% savings rate, right?
Yeah.
But if you do what we're saying, that $100,000 becomes $104,000,
right?
Because of that $4,000 match they're giving you. Now, your savings, though, is now $14,000 because all $4,000 of that extra money is going into your savings, right?
Right.
So this is what's really cool about that. So you really didn't do anything different personally, but your savings rate, if you do the math, now jumps from 10% to about 13.5%.
Right.
Just because of that money that your employer is putting in. And that just goes to show how valuable that is, right?
Oh, it's a huge benefit. And that's why we think it's important to include it. But it's also important to include it in your income number.
Yeah. Right?
So you need to do both. Because if you didn't include it in your income, it would actually even be higher.
Right. Yeah, and it'd be misleading.
Right.
Because that is part of your income, right? They're paying you in a different way, but it's part of it. And I think that's a really valuable thing to keep in mind as you're going through these calculations.
All right, important to keep in mind as you go through these calculations. Moving on, you know, is there anything else maybe that you think should be added to a family savings rate beyond what we've talked about?
Yeah, well, I think we'll talk a little bit about debt payments. So a lot of people will pay, I put $500 extra on my mortgage, right?
Absolutely.
And because it's a goal of theirs to pay off their mortgage. And that's fine, but that is actually contributing to your net worth, mm-hmm. right? Because you're paying down your liabilities more aggressively than what you're required to do, right? And so it's important. I think that's money that you could be opting to save somewhere else, but you're intentionally choosing to pay down the principal of your mortgage.
Yeah, and I mean, this is really, really complicated. And we don't want you going out, running out and taking action without really thinking this through and probably talking to some experts in debt management and investments and all the other things. Because the fact is, sometimes it makes a lot of sense to pay extra on a debt, like if you have a really high interest rate or something like that. But sometimes you have people that have like a really low interest rate on their mortgage, or if you did the math, they'd actually be further ahead saving and investing that over 20 years or 15 years than putting it on their mortgage every month. It's just math.
Yeah.
It's not like anything besides that. And so it's good to understand when you're thinking through this stuff that it's not simple. There's no easy answer. This goes back to, like we talked about other things, people on TV, everybody should do this or everybody should do that. You can't do that in financial planning, right? And so understanding, like, if you've got that extra cash flow, that's a really, really important decision as to where you use it. But it is all some really savings.
Absolutely. It is savings. And so what we don't want you to do is count that as your savings rate. We want you to make really informed decisions on where your money should be going. And that's part of a long-term plan, right? We're just trying to give you an idea that, technically, if you are paying down some debt, that it could be considered part of your savings rate if it's an intentional action to grow your net worth in a positive way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. And I mean, and that's the thing is, like what you're saying, I totally agree with, is that you have to be careful, because if you don't have balance in your life financially, and let's say you're taking all your extra money, you're not really saving anything in traditional savings vehicles like 401ks and IRAs and investment accounts, and you're doing it all towards debt pay down, that's not probably going to get you in a great spot either.
Right.
Because, you know, then you have like all this debt's paid off, but you've lost all the time for compounding and you have no money.
Right.
And so, like, that's our point, is that this all, you know, plays into it, but you really have to be, you have to think about it,
right?
You know, because all these things work together. And the idea is to get to a place where you're financially independent. So it's oftentimes doing a lot of things together. And then the result's great once you get there.
In this category, you know, Dave Ramsey, love him, hate him, whatever may be the case, that's why his step there is saving 15%, right? He's paying off all of your commercial debt or student loan debt and all that kind of stuff. But then you get to a certain point and he just says, look, for retirement, you just say 15%. Once you get past that, what you do with those extra dollars, if that's going to be to pay off your mortgage faster or save to a brokerage account, or there's some flexibility there, but you've got to be saving for retirement, right?
Right, right.
And so it's just really, really important that you do prioritize that step, but there's nothing wrong with paying off your mortgage. And I think you should be able to count it if you are doing it in a wise way.
Yep.
All right. Well, what might hold a family back then from having a better savings rate? What are some of those obstacles that might get in the way?
Yeah, we kind of split them into two categories. One's functional and one's emotional. And they're both kind of hurdles. And the functional hurdle is pretty straightforward, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I mean, just cash flow restraints, right? If you're spending more, Dan gave an example of like somebody has a lot of debt. So if your spending is out of whack, or if you have a ton of money that's going towards debt payments, and then you're forced to pay the taxes, you're kind of just like, well, whatever's left over, I guess I can save, but that's usually probably not very much. And that's, so you've got to try to figure out a way to have that cash flow restraint free up the money. And a lot of that comes to paying yourself first.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where we just mentioned funny Dave Ramsey. Like a lot, Dave Ramsey has some great programs for people that are in that situation. You know, the goal is to free up cash flow so that by paying down debt and by really getting a handle on your day-to-day spending. And so that might, if you're in that situation where you literally don't have the money to save, go check out Dave Ramsey's programs, and it's very likely that could be helpful for you to get you on the right path to begin to take control of your money versus it controlling you.
Yep. And then some of the emotional hurdles, just, you know, overspending is one, right? It's just you're not being accountable, right?
Yeah.
You're just spending money to spend money without really a plan for saving.
Yeah, right. It's just like kind of like loosey-goosey, right? We're not structured.
Right.
And so whatever's in the account, we spend because there's not any set plan in place. The next one is really debt aversion. This we have seen quite frequently. So there are situations where people have so much fear around debt, you know, that everything they have goes to debt payments.
Yes. This is you're right. And it's, not against Ramsey
right.
at all, but a lot of the people who have had a tremendous amount of success in his program paying down debt. So maybe they have $100,000 in student loan debt or a bunch of credit card debt or something like that, and they've done it, right? Mm-hmm. They've paid it off. Well, then they turn and they look at their mortgage and they're like, I don't want to have that. I hate debt, mm-hmm. right? Well, at some point, you need to start saving,
right?
And so that people that are so consumed with not having any debt, right, which I would categorize a mortgage a lot differently than credit card debt, for example,
right?
And so you want to understand your debt and know which part is still you can have a healthy financial situation by having some debt.
Yeah, right? And I will say the other thing we have seen, some people that like some of the Ramsey people, they hate debt where they're never going to take on more debt.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like their whole goal is I want zero debt. And like Brent said, sometimes there's some things that make sense and sometimes some things you need to take a second look at, but there are also people that pay it off and then actually take on more debt.
Yeah. Which,
you know what I mean? You're like, and it's almost like a game. Well, I bought this and I took on this loan and now I'm going to buy this and take on this loan. I'm going to pay that off. And, you know, at least it's good that they're trying to pay things off. But the bad part is, like we got back to, is they're not saving anything, right?
We have had, I've had that same situation too, where somebody will ask, well, should I pay off my car completely? And the answer to that is always, are you committed to never having a car loan ever again? If yes, then it's fine. Like, go ahead, pay it off one time. Get it over with, and then save that money moving forward. You've just improved your situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you pay off a car that you have a 5-year loan on, for example, you pay it all off in the first year, and you haven't saved, and then at the end of 5 years, you still haven't saved any money, and you just go take another car loan. Well, that doesn't help anything at all. You just spent the money you should have been saving.
Yes, that's the big thing. Are you spending what you should be saving in that? The next emotional hurdle is really fear. And so this comes around, and this is a problem in the U.S. because we don't get a ton of financial education. But when you don't really understand like how to save and invest, it can be really scary.
Yeah.
And so back to the debt, because if you're making a choice, we have a choice like between paying debt or saving and investing. Many times the reason people choose putting the extra money towards debt is they understand it. It's right. It's pretty easy to understand. And if they don't understand about investing, maybe they'll partially do it like, well, I opened the Roth account, but you know, I put some money in, but it's just sitting in cash. You know, like they don't really understand and know how to do it. And so fear can really be a hurdle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And then just being, you know, naive really about kind of goes in the same thing, understanding what's going to happen if you are a good saver, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, being naive is not like that. Sometimes people are like, oh, you're naive, and they think that's negative. You know, naivety, I can't say that word, naivety.
That's what I went for,
naive. Naivety, I think, is exactly how you say it. But the point is, it's just a lack of understanding, yeah. right? So this stuff is complicated. Like, I mean, believe me, Brett and I sit down with clients and we're looking at different options for the cash flow and we're like, we spend a lot of time on this.
Right.
Like, how do you optimize it? You know, how much should be going to these different areas like debt pay down, mortgage, investment savings? It's not simple.
Right.
So, like, you should never feel like, oh, well, I'm like you said earlier, I do nothing.
Yes.
Because I don't understand it.
Which being naive and having fear, that's what usually occurs,
yeah.
right? Is if you don't know what to do, a lot of times, unfortunately, people just will default to doing absolutely nothing, right? And they either won't invest it, it'll sit in cash, or they won't save it at all.
Or they end up spending it because it's sitting in their checking account.
Yes.
So we got the emotional, we got the functional hurdles. So we always want to try to provide some solutions with some of the problems that we identify. So how can we help people maybe improve the situation?
Yeah, I think the first thing is just make sure you're getting your full employer match, right?
Yeah, we unfortunately see that quite a bit where people aren't getting that free money that's available to them. And so that's really, really important. If you're in higher tax brackets, you want to make sure that pre-tax contributions are being maximized if that's applicable to your situation.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's one of the things too that'll hold people back a little bit is not really understanding the different tax buckets. So one thing that Brent and I are big believers in is making sure you have enough liquid money available for emergencies, right?
Right.
So most people think, oh yeah, I've got a savings account. Well, you can also invest money with after-tax dollars, brokerage accounts, different things like that. But understanding those different buckets can be huge because sometimes you're holding back because you're like, well, what if I need it? Which is a legitimate concern.
Right.
Right. But like, hey, there are options for that. So understand all the options that are out there where you can get at money. Even a Roth IRA, if you had to, you can get at money you put in
right.
with no penalties.
Right.
So that's a good example.
If you're self-employed or you own a business and you don't have a retirement account set up, this is where a lot of the opportunity lies for you to be able to pack away a good amount of money. Because I think that people being naive to that really limits their ability to save, or at least they think it limits their ability to save.
Yeah. Like,
and so establishing those retirement plans is important.
Yeah. Like, they actually have the money.
Right.
It's just they don't know where to put it.
Yeah.
Which is huge. And you're right. Self-employed people oftentimes have a lot of choices that other people don't. And like what we talked about a little bit earlier, if you're making extra debt payments, is that the best use of that money? Right?
Right.
Could you be improving your situation at a faster clip if you maybe did it a little differently, right?
Yeah, and this is another one that we talked about, but if your savings is done, we call this systematically or automatically probably, it's just like every month this or every paycheck or whatever is the situation, this just automatically happens, then you don't really have to do anything, right? Except for don't stop it. That's all you have to do. And so having those things put in place is really going to help you achieve that goal for a longer period of time.
Yeah, I love the saying that like smaller, more frequent savings is a lot easier than big, infrequent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to make a decision. Like, we don't like making decisions. It takes energy. Right. So if you can take away the decisions and just be like, no, every week or every month this money goes in, like you're saying, it accumulates.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the same, like with Roths, a lot of times, I mean, there can be some issues with Roths because of income limits and things like that. So, but here, if those are not an issue, we're always going to default to, hey, automatically every month we're going to pull money into your Roth. Just this is going to happen. And I will tell you, those ones you know happen, right? Mm-hmm. The other ones were following up with people and making sure that they're contributing at the end of the year. But years can go by where people are like, oh, man, I really don't want to do that this year. Well, if you had done it all throughout the year, you wouldn't have had the choice. You've already done it.
Yeah, right? It's just a good habit. Yeah. It's like so many things in life. By the way, it works for Netflix. I mean, I hate to say it. Why do you think all these subscriptions work? Because the fact is that people don't think about if I'm putting $20 a month into Netflix, oh, that's actually $240. If you had to write the $240 check,
you probably wouldn't be doing that.
You might not. You might be like, I don't need to watch.
Yeah.
Investment education is huge too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like just understanding more about options are available, the benefits of long-term investing, how to invest versus gamble. Like the more you can get in that area is going to help you improve your savings rate.
And then it's always important to track, right? What tracking your net worth, tracking your savings rate, tracking all those things, and always trying to have constant improvement in those areas is really, really what's going to move the needle more than anything, because what we're talking about is things that you can control.
Yeah. Right?
This is one thing that you can control.
Yeah, I love the tracking because it's kind of like, I mean, and I probably said this before, so, but if you're trying to lose weight, the number one thing you do is get on the scale every morning. Yeah. Things that we track, we do better at.
Right.
Plain and simple. Like Brent and I are both golfers. Like we can tell you, like, and I know he's done it and I've done it on a scorecard. If you start taking like, how many fairways did I hit this fairway?
Absolutely.
How many putts? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the end of the round, you're like, man, I suck at getting up and down. Every time I miss a green, I make bogey, right? You know.
But when you have a good day, like you notice what has created that, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow, like maybe I should practice putting a little more. I didn't have very many putts today and my score was good. Like,
yeah.
That's not a coincidence.
No, but right? It's so true. Yeah. Like the tracking works, and that's probably a really good takeaway for this show.
Yeah, tracking is so very important for everything you do and kind of gives you benchmarks and also be motivation as well. So I know this entire conversation's been great. A lot of great information is normal. And it's, I think what's really good about what we talked about today is that this is something that you can actually control. Because right now there's so much around us we can't, like the markets, like inflation, just the unknowns day to day with life. So very good conversation. Can we take a moment, though, before we close things out to summarize things for listeners?
Yeah, I mean, what we start out with is kind of a simple high level, the four things you can do with money. You can spend it, save it, put it towards debt, or pay taxes. And so our show today is really about understanding how you can maximize that savings, because that category is huge. I mean, that can change your life really long term, and so it's really good to focus on it. And understanding where your money's going is really the first step to improving your savings, like we talked about. Like, you know, I know budget. Nobody likes to budget, but it is good sometimes just to track spending and see how much is going to these different categories so you can begin to improve. Higher savings rates paired with a good investment plan really can help you become financially independent and reduce a lot of stress around money. And that's really important to get out of this. And financial education is really important. You know, Brent and I, luckily, COVID's kind of hopefully going away for good. But, you know, we're really going to, our next year is really a priority to increase our financial education for people in the community so that they can learn in a way that's going to help them be more successful. And if you're overwhelmed, you know, think about hiring a CFP or someone to help you with these things. Because oftentimes, you know, just a little bit of back and forth in getting some tips on things you can do better can have a huge impact on your overall financial health. And, you know, some of the things that people just take for granted, like once they hear it from someone that has experience in these areas, it just is going to make you take that step forward. And that's all you want. You want that inertia to move forward. So lastly, just make sure you track those habits, you know, and it can be rewarding. When you see you're making improvements, you're like, hey, my savings rate last year was only 8%. I'm up to 11. I mean, that's awesome. And you continue to track it, and you track how your net worth is improving over time. It's going to get you where you want to be, and that's the biggest thing.
All right. Well, great takeaways here for this episode of the Retirement Cafe. We appreciate you listening. Again, if you ever have questions for Dan and Brent over at Avery Wealth, we'd encourage you to reach out. We'd appreciate hearing from you. It's averywealth.com. And the phone number as well, 517-783-1695. And hopefully this can kind of give you a different perspective on your saving and how you're doing as a family. And if you have any questions, again, feel free to reach out to Avery Wealth. All right, Dan and Brent, as always, thanks for your insight and the math and all the numbers and everything else you provide for us here on the show. And we'll do it again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategy. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.